Hey there, welcome to Board Game Hot Takes. My name's Tim.
And this is Chris.
This is Adam.
And today we're going to finish our series on board games' stories. We're going to conclude the series, I should say, and we're going to be talking about the best conclusions in board games, the best way that board games end. Before we get into the conclusions, if you haven't listened to the rest of the series, are you the type of person that goes to the back of the book and reads the final chapter? Then just jump right into this episode. But if not, then go back to our first episode about 8 weeks ago, and that was intros, best intros or introductions and stories. And then we did build up in stories, and then we did climaxes and stories. And now we're finally getting to the conclusion. So don't jump ahead. Go back and read the whole book. Finish the rest of those first, unless you just really want to know how it ends.
But question here, does anybody actually do that? Does anybody actually go to the last chapter of a book to see how it comes out?
I mean, Billy Crystal and when Harry Met Sally, I know that he did it.
I don't think anybody really
fictional
does
character.
That.
I think you're probably right. It's a pretty cynical outlook to have to go up there and figure out what's going on. The story, the build up, that's the fun part of it, right? You want to get the whole thing. You want to get that whole experience. Let's talk about conclusions. So what did conclusion mean to you guys? For me, the conclusion in a board game is really the ending. It's like, okay, we finished the game. The game's over. What happens now? And that could be scoring. It could be something that's exciting that happens at the scoring phase. It could be something that happens, you know, some story element that happens at the end of a game. But it's always like after the gameplay's finished. So the conclusion to me was, what's happening after the gameplay finishes?
I mean, I kind of interpreted it the same way. But the problem with that is that, at least to me, and I know you felt differently about this, Tim, because you said so last time we talked about this, that the climax is really the exciting part, that the endings, like for me, I had a hard time putting together a list of really exciting things at the very ending. I think I came up with some good ones, but that is by far the hardest list for me to make. But in terms of the interpretation itself, I agree with you. It's once the climax has happened, and now it's the what happens after that. Could be scoring, it could be a story element, the kind of things that you talked about. So what did you say, Adam? Or what do you think?
I went mega cheat on this, Chris. I had trouble putting together some conclusions that, at least, you know, traditional conclusions. So I fudged the rules a little bit, and I said for a conclusion, either it could be some kind of in-game scoring or tallying up of this and that. So that's one way to look at it. And I have maybe one of those in my list. But then the other type of conclusion is sort of that post-game feel that you have. Lots of times at the end of the game, you get this feeling, what just happened? Oh my gosh, I can't believe this thing is over. And you sit there and you take a step back and analyze the whole thing. So I took it from that angle, since I was having so much trouble with this traditional angle. How do I feel after this game is done? Is the hairs on the back of my neck standing up still? Am I just exhausted from the experience? Do I want to go back and do it again? What could I have done differently? I do want to play this one again. What am I going to do different this time? So games that give me that kind of feeling in the post-game afterglow. We had so much fun doing the climaxes. At least at the beginning, it was fun. And then it was just got exhausting. And I couldn't believe I was still awake by the end of it. I just want to get done with those climaxes. And now I'm glad we're talking about conclusions.
That's the spirit.
It's an interesting take. And I'm excited to see what gets the hair on the back of your neck standing up at the end of a game. That's a really cool. In fact, I thought about that briefly and ended up going a different direction. But I think that's an awesome way to look at conclusion in a board game. I'm excited to see your list here. So we're going to jump right in. All right, so for my number five, so right, I mentioned that scoring, like that's part of the conclusion. And so one thing that I think that some games do really well is kind of hide who the winner is up until the end. Well, I'll be mentioning another one on my list, but this one does that as well. But this game I picked for a different reason. And the game I picked for my number five is Lacrimosa. You're trying to tell the story of Mozart's life, and you're going to help write his final requiem, the unfinished piece that he did not get completed before his death. But what I love about the endgame scoring, is it Mozart or Beethoven? It's Mozart, right?
It's Mozart.
Mozart, yeah.
Mozart, yeah. And the best part about the endgame here is you get to the end, you finish that final round, And then you start looking at that music sheet, you know, the notes out on the board, and start to look at each measure and see, okay, which of the composers has the most beats in there? And then who, you know, like everybody gets points based on which composer they backed in that piece. It's just, what a cool way to end a game, and what a cool component of a game, like an area control component of a game. So I love the scoring in there. Beyond that, Lacrimosa also has some other fun end game scoring in these royal court tiles that you can pick up, which are basically end game scoring tiles, but they score based on the types of music you've created or the types of cards you picked up over the course of the game. So just a couple of really fun ways to just end that game. And the couple times that I've played it, I always thought it was really fun to go through that scoring, see how well everybody did. But because of that, because of the sheet music, the Lacrimosa, the Requiem, you're really competing against other people for the final scoring. And that was super fun for me. So Lacrimosa is my number five.
That's a great choice, Tim. Throughout this whole series, you guys have snatched out so many of them from underneath me by getting your lists in first. And this is one where, actually, I think maybe I even gave my list first on this one, but you still
did. You can't blame me.
But I still think you snatched this one out from me, because if I had thought of it, I would have added it too. So nice, nice choice.
Yeah, this is a great pick. I don't remember much of the game. I remember that composition sheets being one of the coolest parts of this game. And I just remember this game being really cool in general. I would like to go back and play this one. Great pick, Tim.
All right. Well, my number five is Keyflower, designed by Sebastian Bleasdale and Richard Brees and published by R&D Games. This may be a little bit of a non-traditional choice, because this is not a game you think of as being a real heavy storytelling type of game. But that's part of the thing with this, the endings topic that we're talking about, is that I found myself going in that slightly more non-traditional approach because I didn't see a lot of games that had a traditional storytelling manner of approaching the ending of the game, that it really did focus more on other pieces like, you know, the scoring. And there are some that actually include some storytelling elements that I'll come back to later on in my list. But for this one, I went straight scoring. I think sort of like what you were just doing, Tim. Keyflower, to the extent there's any story in this game, it's all about building up a village in a medieval land of key something. Throughout this game, you are trying so hard and facing so many challenges trying to pull together this village. And the way you do it is by bidding on tiles. And it's a brutal bidding system. For each of these tiles, you get some benefit. For the earlier parts of the game, you get tiles that provide you the ability to get resources or potentially to move resources from tile to tile. Because to use a resource, you have to have that resource moved onto the tile, and you have to have a move ability in order to get those resources there. Later on in the game, you start getting these tiles that let you take those resources, turn them into other things, and ideally at the end, turning them into points. And by the end of this game, there has been so much blood, sweat, and tears getting these different tiles into the right places, pulling together just the right combination of them, that when you're finalizing your game and you're getting down to that last round where everybody pulls in those last boats and then scores off those final scoring tiles, and you're going from building to building to building, seeing, do I have the right resources here? Did I get the points that I needed? Was I able to snatch out the right tile from Tim or Adam because they knew the one that I needed to get because I had all these resources and that's what was going to score me points? Did I manage to get it, or did they get it away from me? That's such a big finale. And then that final tallying always feels so satisfying to me that even though there's not a huge storytelling element to this game per se, that finale to me is such a satisfying piece of gameplay.
I remember this one is tricky to get it right in the end. You're sort of tracking what color of dude everybody has and if you're going to be able to get that final scoring piece, Chris, like you're talking about it, and to be able to nail it is so satisfying and difficult as well. So that's also a fun pick, Chris. Nice one. A bit of board game journalism I want to submit to you guys. Okay, David Turksey, I think is the way that everybody says it, but he actually said how to pronounce his name on his Ask Me Anything on Reddit. So I think it's David Turksey, something like that.
Nice.
I know he listens sometimes when we talk about his game, so maybe he'll correct me. Anyway, he's going to design another game in the Key series with one or both of these designers. I forget which one. So that'll be kind of exciting. See what comes out of that.
Nice. looking forward to seeing it.
That's cool. This is a game we should throw a BGA game on. This, it's been a while. I actually picked this up not too long ago. It was like $20 at my seller's market, you know, the one I talk about all the time where you can buy used games. And I always said, hey, if I see this out there, I'm picking it up. And somebody had it, and I'm excited because I have a regular group of like 5 to 6 people that get together, and this, the next time we're all getting together, I'm going to bust this one out. I think it'll be a great fit for it. But we should play this on BGA as well. It's a fun game. I miss it.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay, my first pick, the beginning of my cheater list here, because I think someone else has already picked this one, but I'm going to pick Star Wars Rebellion. This is a big, epic game. It's going to not just epic in components and pieces, but epic in length as well. You're going to be playing this game for 4 to 5 hours, 3 days if you're playing it with my dad, because he is, we'll say he's a thinker. The post-game glow that comes from this game, you have all these different moments that happen over the course of, you know, you're rewriting a Star Wars original trilogy plus Rogue One, which maybe Rogue One is the best Star Wars movie out there. In my opinion, it is.
This is a hot take.
There you go. The post-game glow, that's what I was talking, post-game glow. It's immense. You're talking about, oh, remember when Han Solo went to Cloud City, but he couldn't get his buddy Lando because he rolled the crappiest dice ever. Or you countered it with the Emperor and you electrocuted his butt before he had a chance to do it. Just these different wacky scenarios that come out of the different actions that you're taking and trying to do. And, oh, there was that one thing. That was where my secret base was. You were one space away from it, and you moved to this other space instead of coming after my secret. You were so close to getting me. I can't believe that you didn't get it. Or, oh man, you know, you took over that planet. I didn't get my Star Destroyer. I was going to bring that in there and totally crush your tiny little moon over here. These different moments that you get to recap and go over after playing this game, where you're basically holding your breath the whole time because of the tension of the whole thing. I think the glow that results after playing this one is going to last and stay with you. And you'll be thinking about it for a few days, a few weeks. You know, I'm still thinking about last time I finished a game of this with my dad. It was epic. This is one of the ones that gets me tingling. If the blast battle comes up, if the base ever gets found, there's that timer mechanism. You're just trying to survive. If you're the rebel, oh, it's a great game. If you have the time and you're not like Tim and you enjoy, what does Tim always tell me? Is this game's fun if you actually enjoy having fun. So that's my first pick, a game with a great conclusion and afterglow, Star Wars Rebellion.
Adam, I have an important question for you. Does your dad listen to this podcast? Does he know that you make a podcast? I guess I should ask first.
I've told him about the podcast, and he's claimed that he listens. I don't know how much of a regular listener he is. I like to imagine he listens to all the episode and is just hanging on every word that I have to say and so proud of his son, but he's probably just like slapping his face and being embarrassed every word that I say. I don't know if I want him to listen or not.
If you're listening, hello, Adam's dad. But also, Adam, I would imagine that if he did listen, he would regularly comment and say, oh, do I move too slow, Adam? Because you call it out all the time.
I think he knows that he doesn't care. He's like, yeah, I move slow. You're going to deal with it.
Fair enough. All right.
I'm your dad. I like dealt with your nonsense for 17 years. You can wait exactly. for me to take
I changed
turn.
Your diaper.
I changed your poopy diaper. Yeah. Well, that's a good choice, Adam. I mean, this is a game that at every level, it's great storytelling. Every part of the game is great storytelling. So I think you can be forgiven for picking this one for a second time. And I think it was actually me that picked this several episodes ago. So it's been so long. It's been so long that I think it's okay.
Thanks.
I thought it was Adam that picked it last time. I guess, I mean, hopefully, let's see how many more we're going to have tonight. I mean, we got to the final episode with no other duplicates. Let's see if this can be our last one, guys. Think we can pull that off?
There's going to be one more for sure. Sorry.
Oh, Jesus.
We'll survive.
All right, fine. All right, well, my number four is a game that goes in a different direction. And this is a solo game. It's Paperback Adventures. This was designed by Tim Fowers and Sky Larson and published by Fowers Games. Paperback Adventures is a word-based deck-building game where you basically have a deck of letters, and every turn you're trying to play out a word out of these letters, out of the cards you've drawn off a deck, to defeat a lackey or a minion or do damage to it. It's such an interesting concept, and it works so well for me. But what I love about the conclusion, and when I'm talking about the conclusion, I'm talking about you just finished beating one of the three stories in the series. So you are essentially going to play against one lackey, and then you'll play against a level two lackey, and then you'll fight a boss. And the fun part about this game is that most of the buildup happens between these different games. And I don't usually play them all at once. I'll play one and then I'll put it away for a little while and then I'll come back and play another one. So when you beat the first lackey, what happens is, first of all, there's rewards. There's a double-sided card that you're going to get as rewards. And you get to pick at the end of that battle which one you want. And it might have some positives and some negative effects, but there's going to be some surprises in there. It might say, like, take one item off the top of the deck, or take a MacGuffin, which is like kind of an ongoing effect that you're going to get for your deck, or it's going to give you some letter. You're going to get a free letter off the letter deck, but you also might get some negative things. So that's fun. It's exciting. It's like, I got to this end and I get to, you know, add some components that are going to build up my engine here. But then there's like a market phase. And so these crowns that you've managed to collect over the course of that first round, over that round, you get to spend them and you get to buy things from this awesome market row. It's like so much fun to get to that point, to get to that phase. The gameplay itself is a blast, but my favorite part is when you get to the end of each of those battles and you get to do the things. And if you get to the boss, right? So like the conclusion on the boss, and there is a little story that gets read as well on the completion card for each of these monsters that you're fighting. But when you get to the boss, you still get to read that story. And then if it's the first time you've defeated one of the bosses, there are some cards that you just get to like open up for the first time and add them into your game so that they'll be available for the future. So every time you're fighting something in this and defeating it, it creates some fun story element or some fun engine building that's going to happen. So Paperback Adventures, super fun to get to the conclusion. I'm always looking forward to it.
Tim, this is a game I tried playing. I couldn't get past the setup and the components. You have to have like the regular box and then you have to buy one of the stories or something. And then you have to organize this thing over here and you have to put the market. I can never figure out how to organize the market. There's a lot of, I don't know. I'm sure it's easy once you know what you're doing, but from going from rules to this box is setting this thing up for your guy and this thing up for the other guys. It was a little much for me. And then trying to track it with these little things that, you know, basically just better to leave them not in and out of the plastic chunks because they grip onto the little metal thing so tight. So I had, I ended up selling this one before I really wanted to give it a chance. I didn't want to, it made me not want to give it a chance.
Yeah, this is definitely a game. We'll be talking about Voidfall, I think, in the near future about the effort to get into the game. Mm. And Paperback Adventures is definitely a game where it's very easy to get into once you've kind of separate all the components and you've set it up the first time you've played the first game. I can set this up and be ready to play in like 2 minutes. Hmm. But I do remember that it took a long time to get there the first time. The rule book was a little bit of a mess. You had to sleeve all these cards. You're right, the components didn't quite work perfectly. So my first attempt was very frustrating. But after I got past that first game, I really loved it. I think they fixed some of the components, especially like in a second printing, you know, those metal components that are not fitting very well. I think there were some fixes for that. Get past the first game of this. If you can get into it, get through it, and you like to play solo, then you're going to have a great time with this game. If any of those things are a roadblock for you, might be a little rougher. But in any case, you're missing out because there is a great conclusion in every game that you play.
All right.
Well, my number four game is a little bit of a different tack than the last one that I took. With Keyflower, I was talking largely about endgame scoring. In my next game, I'm going to be talking about story at the end of the story. And this game is Charterstone, designed by Jamie Stegmaier and published by Stonemaier Games. This is a legacy game, so I feel like there's a bit of a cheat here in the sense that what I'm going to say about Charterstone could also be said about a lot of other legacy games. I could say it about Clank Legacy, or even, what's that one we played recently? The My City, the legacy version of that on BGA, or a campaign.
Is there a story in that?
There wasn't really a story in that, but there was, well, I'm getting there. I'm getting there, where I'm actually going with this. Or a campaign game like Scythe, The Rise of Fenris.
Yeah.
And in Charterstone, the thing that got me in the finale is where after you've completed your game, you've done your scoring, you've had a winner, you've had a loser, but then at the end of a bunch of the episodes, you end up having to make some kind of a choice, or there's a choice made based on some game condition, like a person who received so much of this thing or that thing. But there are choices that are made that are going to create rules or change conditions for the next game. And especially in a place where that's an affirmative decision by one of the players. So for example, and I'm just making this one up, this is not necessarily one from the game, but it might be something like the player who has the most money gets to choose this thing or that thing, you know, one action versus another action. And then they'll choose, you move on to a story element based on that, and that's going to change the direction of the game potentially. And that's one of the things that I love so much about a lot of these legacy games is the ability for the people playing it, whether individually or as a group, to make these choices that are going to make these branching episodes, these branching storylines that are going to go in different directions. And Charterstone, even though it's not one of my favorite games, it was a decent game, but it wasn't a great game. But this part of it always gave me a little bit of a thrill. Like I said, that's true of a lot of these legacy type games, and Charterstone is no exception, but I think those kind of game choices, the sort of post-game choices, I should say, really do create a fun thing in a legacy or campaign style game.
Okay, cool pick, Chris, but Mike, I'm gonna go on a kind of a tangent here. What is the difference between a campaign game and a legacy game? Is it that a legacy game you kind of go through once and stuff gets torn up and you're only going to ever play it once, whereas a campaign game you can go back and reset it? Is that accurate?
Oh, can I take this one?
Oh, go ahead.
No, I think, Adam, that is the official, like, I mean, for the people that make legacy games, they'll say that that is the thing. It's like, if you're going to permanently change a component in the game, then it's a legacy game, whether it's like you write on a card or you rip up a card or you open up a component and it can never be reset. That's a legacy game. Now, I think that you could consider some campaign things where there's hidden information that gets revealed. And the Scythe Rise of Fenris campaign is a great example of what feels like a legacy experience, even though it's not really a legacy experience, because you could reset that, and we have reset it and played it over again. But I think it feels like a legacy experience because there's hidden information. You don't know what's going to happen. Something gets revealed at the end of a round, you add new components or whatever. Legacy games, I guess the idea is that it's like you permanently change it. Boo to legacy games. Yes to campaign games that feel like legacy games. That's my choice every time.
Some lightning round. Are they a campaign game or legacy game? Gloomhaven.
Legacy game, but barely.
Legacy game, but okay. Clank Acquisitions Incorporated.
Legacy game.
Pandemic Legacy.
Legacy. Okay. If it has legacy in the name, it's probably a legacy game.
That's right. That's a good chance.
So make sure. Oath.
I think that's a campaign game.
Like a never-ending campaign game?
Even though it carries through.
I think that's correct. Yeah.
Because the story carries through, but you don't permanently alter it. So you could completely reset it back to the original starting state. So it's a campaign game.
Yep. And barely even really a campaign game. It's just there's a winner from the previous game that carries over some benefits to the next one. But it's barely even a continuing story.
Mechs versus Minions.
I think Mechs versus Minions is a campaign game, although I've never played it, but I don't think you actually alter things. I think you could reset and start from the beginning.
And lest you guys think I'm crazy, I was not making things up with that My City Legacy. There was actually an episode where if you didn't like take out all the banditos, they showed up on your board the next round. So the things you did in one round did actually have some impact on what happened the next round, I think.
No, for sure. And that was the My City Roland, right, that we were playing.
Oh, but yeah.
The right. Original in My City is the same. Like, you literally put stickers on your board or you mark on your board. So you will never replay that from the start again.
Yeah.
Like, some of these legacy games give you end game modes that you could then play a game in the future, but you can't ever replay the campaign if it's a legacy game. So, yeah, I'm done with legacy. I'm out. No more legacy. Let's do campaign games that are resettable. That's the way to go.
And then retro spoilers, banditos are in.
Yes.
My or whatever it's called. City Rolling Right, in case you care. Next up for me is Dune Original. That's it. Just regular old Dune. This is a game that was originally published. It's fun to tell the story back in 1979. The same designers that did this game called Cosmic Encounter, they wanted to apply an IP to it. I think this was after Cosmic Encounter. So Bill Everly, Jack Kittredge, and Peter Lukta put together Dune. So six wildly crazy asymmetric factions, not too wildly, actually, you know, compared to like what we have now, like Root and Hegemony. So the factions here are a lot more similar than those, but there is some asymmetry here. And basically each faction has some power in a different phase of the round of the game. And the game is incredible. All this wacky stuff happens. You've got this map. It's like an area control map where you're vying for control of these different sieges. I think there's five different sieges, little tiny regions on the map that you're trying to get control of. You can have partnerships. You can have alliances as the game goes on. You can try to do it by yourself. You can break these alliances when a worm shows up. So there's all these different momentous events that can happen. We talked about a little bit during the combat. If you have that player's spy that they used as their leader and he's actually your spy, then all their side dies and you win the battle. If the guild wins in round seven and you're actually the Bene Gesserit faction and you've picked the guild to win in round seven and maybe you've manipulated them the whole game so that that would actually happen, then you as the Bene Gesserit win the game. So some ups and downs and highs and lows, and what's going to happen after you play this game, you're going to sit there, you're going to catch your breath, and you're going to talk about everything that just happened in this game. You might not even realize like what you did or what was cool. You'd be like, wait a minute, so this thing that I did back in round two had such influence that it rippled effect and caused this thing to happen in round six. I didn't even think that would happen. Or maybe you lost some combat from some silly move. You miscounted the spice that you needed to win this combat, and that affected the whole rest. And you don't realize it till round nine. You're like, oh man, I shot myself in the foot so bad. The feeling I had after playing this game, I played it once at six players here at a group in Long Beach pre-COVID, was I want to go back and play this game immediately and try to figure out what the heck is going on here. So to me, that post, that conclusion, that after game kind of glow and intrigue that I had when I finished this game, it was palpable. And I just wanted to go back and get this thing played again and discover all these little nuances and ins and outs of this incredibly fiddly multiple rule sets that you can play with, strange oddball of a game. I had so much fun playing it. I want to play it again if I can ever find a group of six. That conclusion from that game is still with me to this day. That's original Dune.
You know, my biggest disappointment of 2023 is that Dune Part 2 didn't release this year. It's not releasing till next year.
Bummer.
I'm so bummed out by that. But also, I have never played the original Dune, but of course, Dune, A Game of Conquest and Diplomacy, we have played together, and I recently picked up a copy for $15 on Amazon, and it feels like it's so worth $15. Yeah. So we got to get this one played at our next BGHT con. I'm bringing it. I'm looking forward to it.
The Game of Conquest and Diplomacy is supposed to be really good at two players. Each player plays two factions, the ones that are sort of allied in the movie.
Nice.
So I want to try that. I've heard it's really good at two. I want to see how that plays out.
All right. So I mentioned that I really like games that have kind of a surprise scoring at the end. I mentioned Lacrimosa at the start, but there's a lot of games that do this. So I had to bring up my number one game of all time in tonight's list, a game that could have been on any of these lists. It does all of them well, but I think conclusion, I'm always excited by the end of this game. And this is Everdell. I know you guys aren't as excited about this as I am. We need to get it played some more. But every time, I play this all the time. I play this with my wife all the time. And every time we get to the end and there's just enough slightly hidden information. It's not hidden, but it's like it's too hard to just calculate out while you're playing because you've got the points on your city cards. You've got the actual point tokens that you've collected. You've got the events that you completed and you get points for those. And then you get these purple cards in your city that all score for different things and add extra points. So you never know for sure who's going to win right up until you're tallying that final list. And there ends up being a lot of like, oh, I'm higher here, but oh, they're higher on this next one. And the last two games Daniel and I played, we played with Everdell and with the New Leaf expansion. The first one, she beat me by 4 points. It ended up being like 62-66. The next time I beat her by 2 points. And both games, it could have gone to either one of us. Like, we both had some cool things going on, different strategies. And I love that. Now, like I said, I could have listed a number of games here. I think there's a lot of games that do this really well. A couple others that came to mind as I was thinking through this. Nucleum, which is a fairly recent game by us. But I love that there is some in-game scoring, but a lot of end-game scoring that it's just slightly too complicated to just keep track of while you're playing. And then Lost Ruins of Arnak is another great one. I wanted to mention one other one, though, and that is Scythe, which Chris always complains about the scoring on that. But I think it's interesting because in the rule book for Scythe, Jamie Stegmaier literally says, if somebody is counting up points on their turn, that's breaking a rule. Like, you're not allowed to do that, because the point is that it's supposed to be a little bit of a surprise. You're not supposed to know who currently has the lead. You're not supposed to go into that final battle and say, if I don't go and fight Adam right now, then the game's over. You're playing it by gut. You're playing it by how well you think you can do, and not just what there's no, like, you know, take down the leader situation.
Then I have to say, you totally broke the rules in one of our plays, Tim, because that's exactly you.
I never did that.
You took that territory from me, and you're like, aha,
never. I calculated it out perfectly. I've never done that. I think memory is off on that one.
And I'm not even sure that's a legitimate comment that it's against the rules to count up points. I mean, I'm not sure you really do that.
To see your standing.
The point was not only, I think, for the fun of the surprise of who's going to win, but also because, like, you know, there's going to be someone sitting at the table, if that rule doesn't exist, that are going to be sitting there spending 10 minutes on every turn, calculating everything up and just slowing the game down and taking the fun out of it, sucking the fun out of it. The fun and conclusion comes from not knowing what's going to happen until right at the very end. Anyway, Everdell, I picked...
According to Adam, though, that guy is you.
No, it's not. I don't have any memory of that. I don't have that recollection. I think that's completely not... I think Adam just made that up right on the spot. No. Everdell, my number three.
All right. Well, we'll let that one go for now, but we'll have our eyes on you next time, Tim.
Yeah.
All right. So for my first game, Keyflower, I went mostly endgame scoring, but there's a little bit of a hint of story there. For my number three game, I'm going with straight fun endgame scoring, which I guess is sort of a little story of its own. And this game is Cascadia, designed by Randy Flynn and published by Flatout Games. Again, not a lot of story here as you develop the game. You're laying out your tableau of tiles, creating habitat, putting animals in the habitat. But the thing that's so fun in this game is the endgame scoring, where you get to see the benefit of all your hard work. And in this very, I don't know, I find it very amusing kind of way. It's fun to have the habitats where you're looking at who has the largest habitat, but that's not really the part that I'm talking about. The part I'm talking about is the different animal scoring. And for each of those animal scores, there's something really thematic about it. Like, everybody knows about the salmon stream. Like, if you have salmon in a row from tile to tile to tile over like a stream, that's big points. Or the hawks. You can't have two hawks next to each other because hawks just don't do that. Or at least you can't score them if they do that. Or having the elk that want to clump together because they like to travel in a herd. I find it so satisfying getting to the end of that game and then looking at those conditions again, those scoring conditions, and then applying them to each of those different animals. And as I'm doing that, I'm thinking to myself, it makes total sense. These salmon want to go up and down the stream. These elk want to go herd through the savannah. It's such neat stuff. And even if it doesn't tell a story in the traditional sense, it is a great end to a game after a fun tableau building experience.
Chris is a great pick, and you keep saying it doesn't tell a story. I want to disagree with you a little bit. I think it does tell this wacky story where you're building your habitat and you made some goofy move and you have to put a salmon at the top of an icy mountain or something like that. You have these just ridiculous scenarios that come out, but it's like you said, you're trying to put your elk together and a fox is going to come in and mess with a bear is going to be right in the middle of your elk herd or something like that. So you have these fun moments occurring in this game. I think there is a nice little story to tell here, especially if you're doing it right. And as those different ecosystems or habitats build out, you're seeing this world get created And if you're doing it right, you're like, oh, this is my mountain range, and here's this mountain lake, and here's the prairie on the other side. So I think there is some story to be had here in Cascadia as the game develops. But yeah, you nailed it. That the conclusion of this game is I was going to say dynamite, but I'm not, like, that sounds stupid. The conclusion of this game is...
Say it.
It's dynamite.
Yeah. No prairie salmon.
That's so funny. I almost picked this because I think one of the great things about the scoring at the end is not only those unique scoring conditions that change per game, but the fact that you are literally competing for the majority in, or, you know, the largest sets in each of the terrains. So it's a very interactive scoring. You don't just look at your own tableau. You have to look at everybody's tableau and decide who is highest, who is second highest. The reason I didn't pick it or wouldn't have picked it is because I do think that it's a lot of time to get the scoring done on what is a fairly light game. And that's fine. Again, a lot of great things here. I'm not complaining about your pick, but something that's maybe just a tiny bit of a turnoff for me with Cascadia. But I wanted to ask you guys, have you guys been looking at the expansion for Cascadia? Because this is like top of my list. There's a new expansion for it. Top of my list of my next acquisition is going to be this expansion. I can't wait to try it. But I don't really know anything at all about it other than that there's an expansion. Have you guys looked at this at all?
I didn't really know anything about it, including the fact that there is an expansion. So now I do. I'm going to have to find out more about it.
No, so as I was Googling this one, or board gaming geeking this one, as Chris was talking about it, it's called Landmarks. Came out in 2023. From browsing the pictures here quickly on Board Game Geek, I can tell you absolutely nothing. There is a
yeah, there's like some little minis you can put out on sections on your map or something, but I don't know what they do or anything like that. But I don't know. I don't really care. I just, you know, I'm excited to switch up Cascadia a little bit. I think it's a super fun game and I'm excited to change the variety. But yeah, great conclusion, Chris. Good pick here.
Up next for me is Through the Ages, A New Story of Civilization. Is this a cheat? I think somebody else used this in somewhere along the line in the games. Maybe not. I don't know. I'll have to go check the record. But this is a one where it's all about the in-game scoring for me. There is a lot of story to be told, tons of story to be told. You're developing a civilization through the use of these cars and this epic market. You're crafting every turn with these action points meticulously. If you're on the app, you can spend all kinds of time going forward and backwards. And I want to undo this, redo this. I want to put this right here. I want to build this piece of my wonder of the Colosseum back here. Wait. Actually, I want to build this, the masonry technology first, so I can use one action, build two steps of the Colosseum back here. And that's all under the purview of Julius Caesar, who's my leader. And maybe we're going to develop a little army over here in the meantime. I get to play two political actions. So these are all the things you're doing in a different turn. That's one turn of Through the Ages. And you have, 12 or 13 or however many of those turns throughout the course of the game. And you've gone to war, or you've attacked your enemy, or you defended off some barbarians or this and that. You've gone through pestilence. You've had rats eat all your food. All kinds of crazy stuff happens. And then by the end of the game, you have... is it Ian Fleming as your leader? And then he can take a peek at the other players' political cards because he's James Bond or something. And now you've gone to the end of the game. You're trying to counter Bill Gates and Steve Jobs. You're trying to counter these nerds that are doing all this tech stuff with your cool guy that's Charlie Chaplin, that's making amazing movies. And you're done. All the culture's there, and you just sit back and relax, and that's it. There's no more actions to be taken. You've taken your final turn. But wait, there's these five in-game scoring cards that have been played long ago, and they're still out there undiscovered until now. You flip them over. Whoever has the biggest military gets 14, second biggest 7, third 0 points. Whoever has the most governmental actions gets a crap ton of points. Whoever has the most level 3 technologies gets a ton of points. And this is going to be different every time. You get to decide what the in-game scoring is going to be, maybe once, maybe twice, three times if you're lucky. So you can kind of promote yourself during the game and have goals to go towards for that in-game scoring. I think that's pretty amazing and pretty clever. I absolutely love the way Through the Ages concludes.
So when we reviewed this game a couple months ago, we got done with the review and I said, I don't know where this is going to go for me. Could fall, could rise. I will tell you that it's fallen, played two more full games of it. And about the only thing that I like less than the playing Through the Ages is the end game scoring on Through the Ages. So I hate to be negative on two in a row here, but I don't have anything good to say about this. I'll pass it off to Chris and see if he agrees with Adam.
Oh my.
I fully agree with Adam on this one. Not only is it a great game, but the end game scoring in this game is so epic and awesome and exciting and satisfying. And you know I love playing the app with this game. And in the app, it has this great way of doing it where it stacks the people based on their by their score. And as you're moving up, you're actually physically moving up and you're like, oh, come on. I just need five more points. Uh-huh. And then, I'm above Adam now. It's so good. Such an exciting way to wrap up a game.
That's a great point. The way the app does this, Chris, makes it that much better where that actually is shuffling the leaders as it's revealing and tallying up these scores. And it doesn't do it like instantly. It kind of adds them up and then a shift up and adds them up and then shift up. So there's this little kind of delay and dramatic pause. So it's really fun the way the app does the in-game scoring here.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I'm going to go to another story-based game that has a great conclusion. And this is Frosthaven. I don't know if Gloomhaven did it quite the same way. I think there's some similarities, but Frosthaven has the most epic conclusion to any gameplay session that you could ever experience. So Frosthaven is a dungeon crawler where you've got unique scenarios. Every game is going to be a unique scenario, different story points and everything. And so there's a lot going on in Frosthaven, but when you finish that tactical combat, if you win, if you lose, not so exciting, but if you win, then you're going to read a story conclusion, might be some big things that happen in the story, and then you're going to get some special things. Maybe you're going to get more gold. Maybe you're going to get some resources. Maybe you're going to get a special weapon. But then you go to the city phase, and the city phase only happens after you complete a scenario. This is where you go back to Frosthaven. And you do a city event, and you're going to actually reveal some story point. You might get in a battle and protect the city from local invaders. You might interact with some of the local colorful characters that are happening. Then you go and look at all of your buildings that you've built in Frosthaven over the course of the campaign and trigger all the things that they do. And then you're going to go ahead and, this is where you're going to upgrade your character. You're going to retire a character and start a new one, or you're going to buy equipment, or you're going to craft equipment. It's just like getting to the end of the story is almost the best part about the game of Frosthaven. Frosthaven itself is a great game. It's a lot of fun going through that tactical combat, but getting to the end of it and seeing what happens at the end of each given story is a total blast. So I love that part of Frosthaven, and I think the conclusion is where it's at. Now, again, this is like, I have a hard time using this or Paperback Adventures in this because it's not the same as playing a standalone game. You're never going to experience that conclusion the same way every time you play it. But I do think that it's such a great and epic experience on a tabletop game that I had to call it out. It's great. You should play Frosthaven just for the sake of getting to the conclusion at least once or twice.
So Tim, how does the map. The map looks like one of the coolest parts of this game. That's kind of what piqued my interest in the first place. Looks like you've got the fortified city down at the bottom of that, and then this cool glacial icebergy situation on the northern part of the map. How does that factor in to the game? Is there any part of that map that's in the conclusion you referenced triggering all your buildings? What's that all about?
Almost not at all. And I mentioned that this game was almost not a legacy game. Almost the only legacy part of it is that when you finish a scenario, you put a sticker out on the map to show that you completed the scenario, or you mark on the map that you completed a scenario. And then with the city part, like let's say you build up a building during the Frosthaven phase, during the city phase, all you do is you take a sticker off a map and you put it on there. Now you get a card that references that you have an upgraded building, but you literally could not interact with the map at all. But it's great flavor. It's wonderful to have that thing sitting there where you get to look at it and you've now fortified the walls and you can see it and you've planted plants in your little garden where you're going to start to grow the ingredients you need for your for your potions. And so you can see that garden growing up. You've actually built a boat at some point. You buy a boat and you can see your little boat, and it's got, you've got the name written next to it on the map. So this is all just for flavor. The map is like 100% for flavor.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful map and it's fun to interact with, but completely unnecessary. And unfortunately, one of the only reasons why you couldn't reset the campaign and have the full experience again. So, you know, I think in a way I wish they hadn't done that, because this could have been a game that you could hand off to somebody else or hand off to your kids and they could replay it at some point or whatever. And once you've kind of, you know, interacted with the map, it's kind of, it's done. So I feel like this game will just go in the recycling bin when I'm done with it, where instead I could have sold it to someone else or given it to somebody else.
I think I do have the version that has the resettable map. Yeah. So if anybody wants to buy a giant box redoable map Frosthaven, just give me a holla.
Do you want to throw it in the recycling bin or hand it down to your children?
Those are the only choices you can make.
I guess so. Well, I'm going to stay pretty thematically consistent with what Tim just did there with my next pick, my number two game, which is Return to Dark Tower, designed by Tim Burrell Seward, Isaac Childress, Noah Cohen, Rob Davio, Justin Jacobson, and Brian Neff, and published by Restoration Games. There is straight storytelling going on in this game. And I'm cheating a bit on this one, like I guess I've done kind of on a couple of them already, because in this game, there really isn't anything that happens after the big climax, which is a final battle with the big evil overlord. But here's the thing. In a story, sometimes there is a big finale, but there isn't any conclusion beyond that. That really the exciting part, whether you win or you lose, and that's basically the binary decision. You either win it or you lose it. And that's what it is in this case. It's a cooperative game. You're working together and you're trying to manipulate the board. You're trying to get rid of the skulls. But in the end, what you're really trying to accomplish is you're trying to get the big bad boss, which is usually some epic villain, to come out of the tower. And then you fight them, and usually fight them in rounds. So there's round after round of attacking them and then backing off and getting some more resources and then attacking them again. And then there's one point usually in the game where you're like, okay, this is it. This is the final attack. This is the one where I'm going to go in, knock him out, or we're going to go in and knock him out. And then you start drawing these cards, and you're doing a lot of this on an app. So not only are you drawing these cards, there's this music pumping in the background and this exciting battle sounds, and you're going card after card, and you're playing your benefits to survive the battle. And then in the end, you're going to defeat the evil villain, or you're going to get killed. And I will tell you this, every time I played this game and won it, in particular, when I play with my son, we're like dancing around the table. We're pumping our fists. We're fist bumping each other. It is just an exciting time. And there isn't anything after that. There's no score to be kept. There's no story piece. I mean, actually, there is technically a story piece they read you after that, but it's not that interesting. But at that climax, it's everything. And even though there's nothing following on to that climax, I think it's the combination of the climax and the conclusion that makes this game a big winner for me.
Well, Chris couldn't get enough climaxes. It sounded like he went back for one extra climax, which I don't have any problem with that. It's been a while.
I should have got my thesaurus out.
It's been almost since we had one, but a great pick, Chris. Sounds like an epic climax here.
Yeah, so I would say that for me, that's where I would have put this game, was in the climax, because there is a big climax. It's like the ending of what's happening in the battle, and what's going to be the outcome of that is very exciting. The conclusion, though, like Chris mentioned, I think it was more similar to what Adam was saying. It's that,
yeah,
what happens at the end? What happens after you finish the game? What are you talking about? What are you thinking about after the game's over? What do you regret not doing? Or what was that one mm-hmm. time that the tower spit out a skull that just totally messed up your plans? So, yeah, the interesting conclusion here. Great pick, Chris. Return to Dark Tower.
All right. My next pick is going to be, it's a little bit of a dark horse. This is Shamans. So this is a little card game, a little trick-taking card game, pseudo trick-taking card game, and hidden role game as well. And some of the moments that have come from this game that I haven't realized until after the game was over is what makes this game stand out conclusion-wise. We'll talk about the one game where I took a sneak peek at my card. I knew I was a shadow. Nobody saw me take that sneak peek at my card. And I was like, guys, I'm not going to look at my card. I'm just going to play it. I don't even want to look. We'll just see how this goes. And everybody was just, Adam, what are you doing? This is great. You can't do that. What are you doing? You got to look at your card. Steve especially was just going berserk over there because he can read people. This is why I did it, because he can read people like no other. So if I look at that card and he knows I've looked at that card, then he is going to figure out what is going on in my brain in like 3 seconds. So this was a strictly counter Steve move, and it worked. And he was like, wow, that was pretty cool. And he didn't realize till after the game. So that was pretty fun. Similarly, Steve did something sneaky like this. This game gives you a chance to do these sneaky things and throw people off your tail. I think everyone was suspecting Steve of being a shadow, the guy, you know, the minority. So it's either 3 versus 1 or 3 versus 2 if there's 5 people in the game. And the way we should play this, it's the 4 of us. So it was 3 versus 1, and Steve was a shadow here. And he did something so devious. He gave a dagger to somebody else, even though he was the one most, you know, that would be ruined the most by getting stabbed with a dagger. So that threw everybody off his tail. And then I think the 3 of us were killing each other while Steve's sitting there laughing as he, you know, as he's like, I'm helping you guys out. Here's a dagger. Go find him. So just some great moves that didn't get realized until after, like, oh, Steve was a shadow the whole time. And we had to talk, you know. So it's that post game, like, oh my goodness, that was so clever that you did that. And I didn't have the realization until after the game was over. So some fun stuff to think about. What a punch this game packs for being such a little game with just a few little mechanisms. Great conclusions coming out of Shamans for me.
If you heard Adam's trickery in that game where he looked at his card and then said that he didn't look at it, and then he blamed me for counting the points in Scythe. I mean, I think what Adam was actually calling out was that he's counted the points in Scythe before, and he was just trying to redirect. That's,
oh my goodness.
Why are you bringing up old stuff, Tim? Why are you bringing up?
So back to the game. Stuff,
come on,
that's a great choice. I actually thought about this one too, Adam. I think this one falls sort of into my Return to Dark Tower category, where there's a lot of climax yeah, there that, is indistinguishable from the end game. And I think that's I can't complain about that because I did it myself, but it's a great choice. And recently I actually had an opportunity to play this game for the first time with 5 players where you have 2 shadows. And honestly, it was actually a lot of fun, especially if you're a shadow, because you know, there's somebody else out there who understands you, who cares about you and wants the best for you.
Chris, we did play this 5 players. Remember when your friend, we were in Long Beach and your friend came over for dinner and we played it around the dinner table and your friend won, like took the only potential victory that I had.
I guess that was 5 of us, wasn't it? Yeah. Still awesome at 5 or 4.
Yep. Yeah, totally. All right. Well, my last pick, my number one, is a game that is all conclusion. There's almost no game that happens in this. And this is a game called Fantasy Realms. It's a light little game, takes about 10 to 15 minutes to play. This was designed by Bruce Glasgow. And the whole concept of the game is that you're dealt 7 random cards at the beginning of the game. And all these cards combo with each other or combo against each other. So the card might say, you know, gets +5 points for every one of X in your hand, or -15 points if you've got this card in your hand. And all you're going to do on your turn is either pick a card off the top of the deck and then discard one, or you're going to pick a card out of one of the face-up discard cards and discard one. And the game ends pretty quickly. It ends when there's 10 cards discarded. So everybody might only get 5 to 6, 7 cards that they're going to draw over the course of the game. They're trying to put together this combo-y hand over that simple little set of actions. But then when you get to the end and you're actually going to lay out the cards, the scoring is so complicated because every one of the cards might trigger against any of the other 6 cards. So the score sheet is literally like scorecard 1, scorecard 2, scorecard 3. But they're so fun. You could get like one card could be 205 points and then the next one could be -15 points. And every one of them is going to trigger different. And each of us have had so little time to really work with them and build a strategy out of them. So it's all about what did I manage to pull off in these quick little actions. Now, aside from Fantasy Realms, which is a great start into this series, there's now been a couple of re-implementations. One of them that I got a chance to play recently, I've been really digging, it's Marvel Remix. So if you're into Marvel, it kind of takes the same idea and has you pitting your heroes and their allies and your weapons and stuff like that. But every deck has to have at least one villain in it in order to even win. And the villains are usually negative points unless you can manage to counter those or balance them off with something else. So it's super fun to put these little combos together. And not quite as swingy as Fantasy Realms. The point ranges tend to be a little bit closer. So I really like that version of it. Also, you could check out Stonemaier Games' Red Rising, which takes the same concept and puts it into a little bit of a heavier game where there's more that happens during the course of the game, more turns that happen, more area control and things like that, but still has that big conclusion where it really comes down to what were you able to do with this hand of cards and how were you able to make those characters work together. So all these games, I think, do conclusion great. And I always have fun with these. Fantasy Realms, Marvel Remix, these are like my go-to filler games at the end of a night or the start of a game day. 10 minutes, you just have a great epic little experience because of that conclusion.
Tim, have you seen these apps now that they have where you can, a lot of these games do this, you can take a photo of your hand of cards and it'll do all the summation, the calculating, and your point getting for you. So I don't know if there's one for the Marvel one or for Fantasy one, but I know for like Imperium Legends and Imperium Classics and a few of these games where you end up getting all these points from like a tableau or a hand of cards, you can have these apps now where they just snap a photo and it figures it out for you.
That's a great concept. And I feel like there actually is one for Fantasy Realms that I downloaded at some point. Now, I can't remember. I had forgotten about it, but I'll have to check that out and see if I can find one. Because the idea of that, it does take some time to score up all those things and like look at all the cards together. But if you could just snap a picture of it at the end and get that put together, that's awesome.
So, right. I kind of like the idea of manual, like in Cascadia, I like being able to write it out one at a time and do it. But if it gets so complex where I might miss something or I didn't see this cube floating off over on this thing or whatever this little nugget's supposed to be over here, then I do kind of like the idea of just having an app to do it for me.
Hey, does that app work for Scythe or does Tim have to do that manually?
Chris, I don't think you enjoyed our first couple of plays of Fantasy Realms, but I'm not sure that it was the game or it was the fact that we were playing League Points and you were really pissed off that you lost a League Point based on just a simple little card game. Do you think you'd enjoy, do you think you'd want to dig back into like Marvel Remix or something like that? Or do you feel like not your thing?
Not my thing.
You liked Red Rising though, right? I mean, that's kind of the same thing, just with a little bit more game.
I liked Red Rising a bit, but it also had additional things beyond the card play. There was a board and the theme. I had just read the book. I think that kind of drew me in a little bit more, but the game, the basics of the gameplay, not my cup OT.
Fair enough.
But what is my cup OT is my number one game, which is my second Jamie Stegmaier / Stonemaier game of the evening, one of my all-time favorite games, Tapestry. So Tapestry is an interesting one because it doesn't really have what you'd call an epic climax. It's not a game that has a big crescendo, and really you kind of end at different times of the game, which is another reason why it might seem like an odd choice for a game about conclusions, because each player wraps up what they're doing when they've used up all of their resources, and then they go to their final income phase. And then I might be done, and Tim may still have three or four rounds worth of activities he can do. But what gets this one onto the list for me and makes it so awesome is that the income round, which is normally in most games the most boring possible thing you can do, at the end of a game of Tapestry could be the difference between winning and losing. And the reason for that is that it's a multi-step process, and each of those steps, depending on how you set yourself up throughout the game, can create a huge swing. So you're going to have some things where there's just straight points. You might have your city that you built out, where you score your rows and your columns. You may have took over a lot of spaces on the board, and you're going to get points for that. You're going to get huge points if you used up all of the houses, your income buildings on your player mat. So not just filling in the rows and columns, but using up all those buildings so you're uncovering all those point scoring opportunities. But the really fun ones are when you're able to do something interesting and exciting with either your civilization or with a technology that you can upgrade for big effect. So for example, in a game I was playing recently, someone was able to upgrade their technology in the income phase and do a redo on a big turn. And it was like one of the space turns, one of the space areas where you get to put out some big point scoring card or put out a building or something really exciting. Similarly, there are a lot, there's a million different versions now, especially if you have all the expansion content, of the things that you can do with your civilization. And most of them have some activity you can take at the very end of the game as you go into your final income phase. So you can have big stuff happening even as you're wrapping up the game. And I have seen swings of 100 points, more than 100 points, when you're playing this game and you go to that last turn and you're able to do some really big stuff when the game is actually technically over at that point. So in terms of the conclusion, that to me is one of the most exciting conclusions in a board game, period. And it also happens to be in one of my favorite games of all time.
Chris is an interesting pick. I am starting to come around on Tapestry. I think somebody accidentally invited me to a game on Board Game Arena. So, well, thanks for doing that. I had a really fun time playing this game the last time with you two. Of course, got my butt kicked all over the place, but some things were starting to come together and I started to see, oh shoot, well, I made a mistake here. I would be aware of this thing next time. And I like those kind of moments in games where you realize like, oh man, I made this dumb mistake and this is how to fix it. This is something I'll be aware of next time and get those extra points, have that little moment of, aha, here's what I'm going to do next time. And I'm going to get these suckas one of these times in this game that's confounded me for so long. So another piece that I get to look forward to is this exciting conclusion you're talking about, Chris, and I am very much looking forward to it.
Well, I'm glad you're liking the game.
Yeah, totally. I'm so excited to play some more with you, Adam. This is such an interesting pick, Chris, because this is a game that it's obviously one of my favorites, and I could have picked it for any of the other categories. But the conclusion sometimes can be so a little bit of a downer because one person can finish their game and then the next person takes like five more turns and you're just sitting there waiting. But then I was thinking of Everdell on my list, and that game can go the same way. Usually not quite as drastic, but there are great games. In fact, when Chris and I play together, it usually comes down to 10 to 15 points. You know, it's people that kind of know the game well and are competitive are going to finish within a round or two of each other. So it is great conclusions when you got the right group of people together on this one. So cool pick and glad it made one of our lists here. It's always great to see Tapestry getting a little respect. Needs it.
Yep.
Tapestry getting some dap history. Yeah.
Ooh. All right. We'll let Adam decide whether he's going to cut that in the final edit or not.
I know, right? That was a bad one. All right. My final pick and possibly the biggest cheat of the night besides Tim counting up coins in Scythe is Dune Imperium. So the second Dune game on my list. And I think we've used Dune like five times in the storytelling series here. I stole it from Tim for the climaxes. Now I'm going to use it for conclusions. And this is another sort of gray area where climax blends into conclusion. I'm going to give some caveats here because it's another cheat I'm trying to cover. You get that final battle. Somebody has triggered the end game, whether it's the epic 12-point game or just the regular still epic 10-point game. And the battle's all done. You think it's all over, but wait a minute. Why do people still have these intrigue cards in their hand? Well, shoot, check it out. I have this card that gives me an extra point because I've climbed up three of the four tracks. And look at this. Baha, I take the lead. Tim goes, nah, fool. I've got the card that says I get an extra point because I have two sandworms in my hand. So, ha, ha, ha. And then Chris comes over the top of that with some other wacky intrigue card because he had eight Solari and two dudes over in this thing and one dude over here. Now he gets another point. And then Steve just sitting there looking at everybody saying, shut up, suckas. I got this point. And now that we're tied, I have the tiebreaker card. And he throws that sucker down, which gives him 20 extra spice to win the game. So you've got this amazing set of intrigue cards. You need to have at least one of these, or it helps to have one of these in your hip pocket going into that final game. You need to be thinking about this, setting up something because everybody else has the chance to have one of these, and at least one other person is going to have some kind of aggravating in-game scoring that you need to counter in this, I don't know, post-climax conclusion phase of the game. That's Dune Imperium, one of the all-time great games of ever.
Well, I agree with it being one of the all-time great games, and you had me lost on it being a great conclusion until you reminded me of that ridiculous tiebreaker card, which always creates a hugely fun moment. So now I'm all in and still regret that Dune Part 2 didn't get released this year.
Such a bummer.
Awesome choice, Adam. Really good one.
Thanks for dealing with all my cheats, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, well, that will wrap up our entire series on board games as stories. Super fun to explore that with you guys. And more exciting new, you know, like list content to come. We'll see where things go. Lots of exciting things to explore. But I do have one Apple Podcast review to read before we finish up the show tonight. And this one was a roller coaster. Here's the review. It's from Slippery Pick on Apple Podcasts. And the title was "The Three Musketeers Do Board Games." Pretty good intro there. Not bad.
All right.
And then we jump into the buildup. "This might be my new favorite board game podcast. I enjoy Shut Up and Sit Down, So Very Wrong About Games and others, but this one is pretty much all killer, no filler. Each episode is short, relatively speaking, but no time is wasted. I love that. There's a secretive podcast out there that is fun, but could literally be edited down by 60% and come in at 75 minutes worth of good, non-repetitive content." I think they're talking about the Secret Cabal Gaming podcast, but I'm not positive on that. Well,
sounds good so far.
"These guys, on the other hand, keep it focused and usually have very different perspectives on the subject. The result is that I'm eager for another episode as soon as I'm done with the current one. I really feel that this podcast adds value to the hobby and that the hot take angle is brilliant. A great show." What a climax of a review. So guys, great review, right? Slippery Pick, thank you. That was wonderful. Loved hearing it. Now the conclusion. How many stars do you think we got from Slippery Pick for that one?
Three? One?
Four?
We got two stars on that review.
Really?
So here's my thoughts. I've got two guesses here. Either, number one, Slippery Pick has very, very high standards for their podcast, because as their favorite board game podcast, or one of their new favorites, only 2 out of 5 stars means that he's got lofty expectations of what a board game podcast is going to be. Or they misclicked the stars. So my plea to Slippery Pick is go check your star rating on this review. Thank you for leaving it. It was wonderful reading it. Go check it out. See if you can give us, like, bump those stars up a couple. That would be awesome. Here's the deal, right? It's out of 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. We're sitting at 4.8. We've been there for a long time. Had a ton of 5-star reviews. I've been waiting for it to click over to that 4.9. And I think this 2 is going to maybe just keep us in 4.8 for a while longer. So if anybody else wants to help Slippery Pick out and give us a 5-star review to get us over to that 4.9 territory, that'd be so cool. But otherwise, Slippery Pick, it was great reading this. I'm glad you're enjoying the show, and hope other people find us as well to get some of this all killer, no filler. I think that's going to be our new tagline, by the way.
Maybe Slippery Pick thought we were using like the Michelin rating system.
Well, isn't that still 3 stars? Don't you want 3 stars?
It's 3. I mean, it's still better than
any Michelin stars are good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that'll wrap up this week. Thanks everybody for sticking with us through this series. Super fun time. Until next week. Take care, everybody.
Good night, all.
Bye-bye. Yeah, dude, you're excited, like I just played Tapestry.
Hey there, all right, welcome to Board Game Hot Takes.
Animal!